Hi everybody, it's Mark Bennett from ANZ Agribusiness here, talking agri in focus for the autumn of 2024. So welcome to the edition. Our podcast being recorded today, the 28th of February, so it might take a little while before you're actually hearing this, and in support of our publication, which will be in market soon with all the details you would hope and look to see. I'm joined by our analyst team, Elena Barrett, Courtney Kemp, Michael Whitehead, and of course, Adelaide Timbrell from our economics and research business. So plenty of ground to cover as always. I guess my introduction today is really just pondering the new season. Autumn's always a fascinating time, and trying to think about what the key indicators are that we should be considering to try and make the best guess on it being a better than average or a worse than average year for all the data that we can point to. And I suppose I should even acknowledge in the first instance that, you know, we've recently had impact seasonally from the northern cyclones. We've got late season, really hot weather, creating bushfire damage in Victoria. So let's hope all of that is short-lived and we don't see more damage than we've already seen, and that we can settle into autumn without feeling like it's the late summer that some areas never had. And even going back a bit further, I mean, it seemed like a patchy 23 year, but in many ways it was a very solid year as well. So we still come into 24 by and large in really good shape, noting that there's always pockets of dryness and problems that don't reflect in the average or collective data. I mean, you always think weather first, I guess, when trying to get a handle on what things are going to be like. And for all that I read and see, I'm not sure that there's any reason to think of anything other than it being as normal an outlook as you could imagine. I mean, we never get normal. Normal or average is something that we see in results, not so much in a forward position or reality. But having just come through a period, I think, where a lot of farm decision-making was based quite strongly on the weather outlook that in many cases didn't eventuate, i.e. pointing to hot and dry and sometimes getting quite the opposite. You know, that did compound outcomes and reinforce that no matter who or what data, forecasting the weather is really difficult. So for all of the potential La Nina, the finish of El Nino, I can't see how we'd be pointing to anything in particular on season just yet. Let's hope for the best. But it sounds boring, but it sounds like an average outlook. I mean, there are a lot of other influencing forces at play, and far too many to mention. But you think of commodity prices and you generalize, I think prices are okay. That's always assuming that somewhere near a normal yield go with it. It's about how much you've got to sell, sometimes as much as what it's worth. But prices have been higher, but prices have also been lower in the recent cycle. So I guess one caveat might be about a bit of our production in the Northern Hemisphere to coincide with our year. We haven't seen that for a while, so that's a bit of protection. But you know, in the cattle market in particular, we've probably got supply pressures in a couple of key exporting regions as well. So maybe that's not our biggie for this year, but it's a potential, for example, in grain. Now, if we think about water as opposed to the rainfall we're about to get, I think the storages are really solid. So for irrigators, they've generally got a pretty decent outlook for the year, I think. Costs are a bit like commodity prices. They're high, but they've been higher, so it's not at its worst perhaps, but there's all of those lingering labour, availability and cost and energy costs in particular that still are a squeezing impact on margins. Interest rates, of course, they appear to have peaked. How long before they fall, if that is indeed the next direction that they take, might be lucky to be this year. Adelaide will perhaps talk about that. But, I mean, one thing's for sure, that higher interest rates are squeezing margin, amongst other things, and we're seeing that come through in financial results of profit and loss statements, particularly as livestock prices fell through last year as well. I mean, the outlook just probably is seeing less profit than before, but coming from a really strong base. I guess domestic and global economic health is still really important for us, as is international trade stability, even the regulatory environment around sustainability and matters of ESG. They're all becoming more of a conscious and focused element for everybody to be aware of and to deal with. But, you know, is inflation beaten? What is consumer confidence likely to be like? The cost of living pressures that we continue to see in most economies. You know, they're all factors, but I mean, I think if you're going to tend anywhere from a demand perspective, from a seasonal outlook, from a current financial health perspective, I think it's got a chance to be a better than normal year for a lot of operators in our industry in 2024. Always caveated by you never know what might come from left field, but I think there's enough good news, slightly outweighing the potential limitations for our sector for 2024. So I'm just going to take an optimistic view, noting that it's a bit tighter and knowing that it's a volatile environment in which Agri continues to operate in. You'll get more clues, of course, as we get through the specific commodities shortly. But in the meantime, I'll invite Adelaide to give us an update on the key economic indicators. Thank you, Adelaide.
Thank you very much, Mark. Look, when we look at the Australian economy this year, it will be the worst of the slowdown. But given the challenges that the global and Australian economy have faced over the past few years, this slowdown, I think, is relatively modest and does come from a strong point. So one factor that we see weakening in 2024 is the labour market. So the labour market actually weakened through 2023. We saw the unemployment rate rise, although very modestly, and is still at very low levels. And it's likely to continue slowing over 2024. So at the end of 2023, the unemployment rate was 3.9%. We think that at the end of 2024, it'll be closer to 4.3%. Now, this is still lower than during 2010 to 2020. And when we look over the past 40, 50 years, very rare to see any unemployment rate below 4, and for the most part, really any unemployment rate before below 5 as well. Even though the unemployment rate is still really low, though, we do think wages growth have probably around hit their peak. We think they'll slow from 4.1% growth through 2023 to around 3.5% growth through 2024. That's going to be because as the unemployment rate and underemployment rate rise, there'll be more available workers per job, and that will allow businesses to pass on smaller wage growth. The Reserve Bank has discussions with the business sector regularly, and in their latest discussions, they did hear that businesses had weaker hiring intentions and didn't expect to pass on as much wage growth. But they also heard that even though business costs are rising, businesses are having trouble passing on those costs to consumers compared to 6 months or a year ago. So we're also seeing that kind of stoppage between rising business costs and rising inflation. What this means is that in the inflation battle is making really good progress, and that we should see inflation continue to fall through this year, even if business costs continue to rise or in some aspects accelerate. We don't really expect business costs to accelerate on average, but even if they did, that lack of pass-through is going to keep inflation somewhat under control. We think that inflation will fall from 4.1% over the year of 2023 to about 3% over the year to 2024. Now, 3% is the top of the Reserve Bank's band. That assumes just one rate cut in November. But we'll also get other forms of financial easing through the year. So it's not as if everything stays the same and then there's one rate cut. We've also got the stage three tax cuts, which will help household incomes. And they're actually equivalent to around two rate cuts, just because they do give people more money in the pocket, the same way as reducing interest rates also provides people with more money. It's a different group of people, of course, because it's on income tax rather than on mortgage debt and other types of debt, but it still has a similar effect as those two rate cuts. That's also another reason we think November is the first month for an actual rate cut, because those financial conditions are easing through the year. We also think that because inflation will be lower than wage growth, will actually be repairing some of the inflation damage, seeing their paychecks go up faster than prices, which was the opposite of what happened in 2023. Not seeing too much upside risk for the Australian dollar this year. The US dollar is doing really well. What's going to keep the USD stronger is things like geopolitical concerns, which move more people to kind of that safe haven of the USD. We're also seeing that US economic data implies the economy's in solid shape. And the US Fed looks like they will pause on rate changes in the near term, which will also keep more money in US dollars, given those higher real interest rates. And then when we look elsewhere globally, I think India is a real growth opportunity now that the Chinese economy is slowing down. Not slowing down to the extent that it's going to be a huge concern for the Australian economy, but it is worth looking at other growth sectors. And we are seeing that India's recent kind of tax and other federal policies are really improving. This is helping to sustain India's recent strong economic growth and make it a little bit more resilient and sustainable than growth periods in India have been in the past. There are still some challenges around slow credit growth and restrictions on trade, but it is a country I think to watch in 2024 and beyond. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Adelaide. Appreciate the commentary and good luck with your next few months as well as we continue on in the agri circuit here. I might go to Elena next if I can and tackle the first of our key commodities being sheep and wool. Thanks, Elena.
Thanks, Adelaide. Thanks, Mark. And hi, everybody. We'll kick off with sheep today. And if you're one of the many sheep producers out there looking to the new year to find some stability in markets and prices, unfortunately, I think you're probably feeling a bit disappointed. What we saw was a really welcome and really actually quite significant rally in prices through December and also into Jan. But that was on the back of some widespread rainfall events, particularly in the east. And what we saw was the national indicator prices across all categories really jumping. But to name a few standouts, we had a 92% rise in the Merino lamb indicator, 52% jump in restocker lamb, and 46% for mutton. So some really significant rises, but noting it did drop fairly low there through the late spring, so off a reasonably low base. And during that price rally, it was strong enough that we saw restocker demand immediately following those rain events so strong it eroded most of the restocker to heavy lamb margin for that period of time. So restockers were really actively and quickly back into the market. There was a lot of confidence that came quickly back in, and we saw big things happen over a couple of months' time. But the good fortune of those prices across all categories, unfortunately, didn't last for too long. And we've seen some heavy supply through February, putting pressure back on the market. And subsequently, at the moment, we're seeing all lamb indicators back around sort of 15% from the early January peak, and mutton back about 25% on what was already a more modest recovery through that period. And if we look to some data as evidence of the supply surge we've been experiencing, ABS data tells us that adult sheep slaughter for last year, for 2023, was almost 50% or some 3 million head higher year on year, so when compared to 2022. We also know the total number of lambs processed last year was just shy of 25 million head, That's a huge number. It was up around 16% on the prior year, and it actually set a new processing record for the Australian industry. So I think we should congratulate the industry on actually absorbing that supply and getting through 25 million head of lambs. That's quite the achievement. But looking back, we know that the dry spring, as Mark mentioned, and the threat of El Nino, it really accelerated the sale of many lambs last year, and that contributed to that overall slaughter figure. However, current data suggests that that trend of high supply is continuing into 2024. We've seen January slaughter data up 33% year-on-year for lamb and 16% year-on-year for mutton. So there's certainly still plenty of supply flowing through both the yards but also our processing plants. How that translates into lamb pricing to start with, that large sell-off of lamb, as I mentioned, it has led industry to the all-important question of will there be a tightening of supply this winter and a corresponding price peak perhaps to go with that before the new season lamb hits the market. But anecdotally, we do understand there's quite a lot of lambs on feed at the moment on farm. And we know from the MLA Sheep Producer Intention Survey released last October that about 50% of the 2023 born lambs were penciled in to be sold in the first half of this year. So effectively still on farm, waiting to be sold. So that's a signal that there's still a decent amount of supply to come, but of course time and conditions will tell as to how that timing plays out. There's also obviously the economics of grain feeding and the time and the management and to what weights people will finish, lots of unknowns, but interesting one to watch. Going to mutton pricing now, if we look back at the supply impact on price over time, it's quite clear in the mutton market because we can track a single national price indicator, so it does make it a little bit simpler. And what we can see when looking at the data is that mutton price over the past two or so, let's call them flock rebuild years, has moved really quite obviously inversely to supply for much of that period. But there's a six-month period last year from January to June, so the first half of 2023, where slaughter and price found some kind of equilibrium. So there's still a little bit of variance, but largely they were flat across a six-month period, notwithstanding a bit of weekly volatility. If we think back to that time, we can recall that for many producers, we had a really good season. The conditions were sound. The ewe flock was stable. They'd finished building. They either had lambs at foot or they're approaching their spring lambing. So this year, should that pattern repeat, we're in that period of the year at the moment, if we assume at least an average season, the market could perhaps expect the majority of surplus or cull ewes have been sold, they've already entered the market, and that could correspond to some steadying in mutton supply and price over the months to come. Now, very fortunately, as we speak of high supply, we can speak to Australia's processors continuing to have the capacity to handle what's coming. And importantly also that our export markets continue to demand our product and still at record levels. We look to total lamb exports for January. They were up 48% year on year, a really noticeable increase to some key markets, including the US, which is super positive, up 42% January last year, and they've taken over 5,000 tonnes. Japan and other high value markets similar to the US up significantly as well, in addition to Papua New Guinea and the UK, and stable volumes also to China, which is another big one. So continual growth to these high value markets, it's really important in underpinning prices for Australian producers this year, particularly with high supply. And in other markets, volumes to places such as the UK are just steadily increasing and ticking things along as well. The UK free trade agreement came into force in May, and in December we actually saw a record 1,800 tonnes shipped over to the UK. So certainly that's been a positive for the industry, and we look forward to continuing to see the fruits of that one. Mutton exports, it's a similar story. Total exports up significantly in January, about 52%, but most notably this one does continue to be driven by exports to China, notwithstanding some solid gains to smaller yet still significant markets like Saudi Arabia and also the US, who are again sort of picking up lower volumes than for lamb, but picking up some mutton again as we hope to see that US recovery in economy slowly happen throughout the year. Now, just briefly to the West, we should acknowledge there's still, you know, considerable uncertainty surrounding the future of live exports, and it continues to burden the industry throughout the entire supply chain, really from farming right through to processing, and also coinciding with some difficult seasonal conditions. So we're feeling for producers in the West at the moment. WA is responsible for about 20% of the national sheep flock, but it also includes a really large number of large-scale producers with flocks over 20,000 head. So the continued prosperity of that industry, it's really important to all facets of the sheep supply chain. And we've seen continual calls for transparency consultation through the proposed phase out, and we just continue to watch that outcome and hope for a sensible outcome for our WA producers. So just to wrap up, in terms of what might be ahead for 2024, some stability in supply and pricing would be welcome, but with our now quite large flock, we're a little bit more prone to big supply variances, particularly just at local levels with local changes in the weather or with enterprise level change. So that balance might be a bit tricky to find, but I think the industry can take great comfort in the growing export demand, in the positive signs of our high value markets coming back online, and the continued focus by our producers on meeting weight and quality specs to meet those markets has for a really long time proven to reward them well, and we see no reason for that changing in the short term.
Thanks for that, Alana. Now, what do we make of the wool market outlook?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So speaking of wool, the headlines at the moment in the wool industry are certainly the overall easing of prices to start the year. We've got the EMI sitting around 1150 cents and the WMI at around 1280 cents at present as we enter the autumn. But I think the more interesting story, which has emerged over the entire 2023-24 wool selling season to date anyway, is one of eroding premiums for our finer micron wool. So to put that into context, producers of 17 micron wool can at present expect a little over 300 cents premium compared to 21 micron types. Now, this is a really stark drop from the 800 odd cent premium they were receiving this time last year. So a really big, big drop in the premium they're getting. And even the slightly broader categories, but still what we would consider a fine wool, 19 micron clear, for the past 6 months or so hasn't actually received any premium compared to the 21 micron counterparts. And again, this time last year, they're at least receiving around a 200 cent premium for 19 micron wool. Now, the cause for this erosion of fine wool premium also is the cause for the continual erosion of overall indicator pricing, as demonstrated by that slide in the EMI and WMI that we're seeing. And the cause remains that sluggish consumer demand for finished quality wool products across the Northern Hemisphere. The ABS export statistics for the second half of last year actually demonstrate that premium fine wools, which would in a normal economic condition be bound for the European market, are instead making their way into China, where the same premiums just don't exist. And of course, the Chinese economy's own slowdown continues to place pressure on overall wool pricing across not just the fine wools, but across all micron categories. So if we want to gauge how many producers this loss of margin actually impacts, we can look at the AWEX data for the 2022-23 season, the last full season that we've completed. This tells us that almost 52% of Aussie wool is now under 19.5 microns, so a really, really big chunk. So it's fair to say that this loss of premium is being felt across the industry in a pretty big way. And if we think ahead, the last sheep producer intention survey run by MLA in October signalled that almost 50% of producers were concerned that access to skilled labour, such as shearing, for the year ahead was going to get more difficult than it has been recently. So if we combine that concern with price pressure, we do find ourselves querying the direction of the ewe base in Australia at times. At present, about 65% of the flock are merinos, the wool-producing sheep, but this is already back from about 75% 2 years ago. So demonstrating that producers, as they were rebuilding, increasingly did look to alternative breeds. And perhaps these labour and management concerns, along with a flat outlook for EMI and lack of fine wool premium, have the potential to grow that trend toward non-merino breed. It's possible. Time will tell, though, and we certainly encourage as many producers as possible to participate in these industry surveys, as it really helps everyone in the supply chain understand the key drivers of change, not only on farm, but all the way through the supply chain. In more positive news now, though, the expectation of reducing inflation across Europe and the US into 2024 is really welcome for our wool producers. Although many economic forecasts suggest that real economic growth in Europe will be slow, which might signal sort of no short-term benefit to wool prices, it should at least support a stabilising in price, would be the hope. Australian wool volumes this year expected to be steady year on year. Latest forecasts from the Wool Forecasting Committee are at about 328 million kilos. That's equivalent to the prior season. So there's no overall change in supply that would otherwise add pressure to price. Also in terms of supply, if you look back through the years, you can see that wool auction volumes do tend to take a seasonal dip most years in May and June, and also again in around August. And if you think practically, this could be due in part to many mixed farmers focusing on the peak demands of their cropping programs at that time, as opposed to being the wool shed or out trying to sell and market their wool. But both periods also align well with what are historically the key purchasing times for our Northern Hemisphere wool customers as they approach their winter apparel season. There's obviously quite a lag time between buying the raw product and producing it into a fine suit or coat for the European winter. So if there is to be a demand spike to come this year, perhaps that could be it as economic conditions slowly pick up. But the counter argument to that, of course, is that the supply chain might also be cleverly stocking up on cheap Aussie fine wool at present, as those margins don't exist. So some really interesting times in wool across the various micron categories at the moment. But overall, I think we just hope to see some stabilising in the coming months. Thanks very much.
Thanks for that, Elena. I might bring Courtney to the microphone now, if we can, Court, to talk beef.
Hey, Mark. Hi, everyone. Looking at beef for the autumn period, stronger cattle prices can be attributed to improving confidence over the weather outlook. Underlying the improving strength in the market is the fact that these price improvements come despite increased yarding, as last year's stock is starting to be released onto the market. Looking forward, as domestic consumption of beef is forecast to decline slightly, the export market continues to grow in importance to the national industry. The summer now behind us and a forecast change to the weather patterns across the country, the hope and optimism that was shared by beef producers at the start of summer is coming to fruition. As the beef industry in Australia relies so heavily on pasture, the prospect of a La Nina declaration brings a strong outlook for 2024 for the beef industry. With a greater possibility of above average rainfall across a landscape which has already seen good rainfall this summer, and with most of the country well placed for a strong season feed-wise and at a minimum a year of neutral weather patterns, positivity continues for the industry. National yardings through the end of 2023 were down marginally on the September quarter. However, the first 2 months of 2024 have seen yardings up 20% year on year, indicating a strong start to beef sales for the year. It is not uncommon to see an increase in yardings leading into this autumn-winter period, and with strong indicator prices across the board, numbers should continue to hold into autumn 24. With the rise in yardings across the board, we'd expect to see pricing impacted. However, all indicators continue to rally, with yearling restocker heifers continuing to hold a premium over heavy steers for over 12 weeks straight, again indicating that producers are holding onto their young stock and carrying over, driving stronger prices across the board. Australian beef production has continued to rise despite ongoing processing challenges due to labour shortages, with production up 3.3% through December year on year. It is expected that 2024 will continue to see slaughter rates rise, provided processors are able to access ongoing labour. Australian consumers have seen a steady state of retail prices for beef, with a less than 10% variance in pricing dating back over 14 years, where on the supplier side, the EYCI alone has seen up to a 50% variance in the last 5 years. Inflationary pressures are easing month on month for retail beef prices. Despite this, though, MLA has forecast domestic consumption of beef through 23-24 to decline to 20.8 kilograms per person, down from 21.4 kilograms per person in 22-23. In comparison, other meat product consumption, such as sheep and chicken, are forecast to continue rising through 2023-24, with sheep meat gaining more popularity following a slight decline with relatively stable retail prices. Whilst domestic consumption of beef may be trending downwards, exports continue to be strong. The Australian beef industry is starting to return to pre-COVID levels of export, with strong market opportunities continuing to present. The United States are firmly in their herd rebuild phase, with Australian exports into the US rising 127% year on year. This sharp increase in exports to the US is contributing to total Australian exports being up 47% on the end of summer 2023. The declining US cattle herd is continuing to open up opportunities into the international markets. The US exports into China and South Korea down 15% and 20% year on year, respectively. Brazil remains a strong competitor for Australian beef into these markets, with Brazilian exports into China already up 18% year on year. However, the opening in the market has seen Australian exports into China up 42% and into Japan up 16%. With over 50% of beef produced in Australia exported and a slight downturn in domestic consumption forecast, demand in these markets will continue to be the primary offtake for the increasing beef production levels as a maturing herd increases supply into the market. That's all for beef. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks very much for that, Courtney. Now over to Michael Whitehead, who's going to round out a number of the key commodities. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Mark. Let's take a look at a few commodities today and some quite different ones, and particularly with some figures just having come out from the Australian government on a range of Australian agricultural sectors. Grain is obviously always one of the biggest ones, and we've just seen the latest update from the Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics, which we all know as ABARES, on how the previous crop looked, but also on their forecast already, and it sounds a long way away, but it's getting closer, at the 2024 and 2025 crop. So let's look at what we've just come out of. Their forecast as of March 2024 is that the Australian crop was around 54 million tonnes. Now that includes all grains grown in Australia, all oil seeds and all pulses as well. We can look at this number in two ways. With the silo half full or glass half full way of looking at it, this would be the fifth largest crop that Australia has ever produced. And that's of no disappointment to most croppers or grain handlers. If you look at it the other way, the silo half empty, it does represent a fall of about 30% over what had been the crop the previous year. Although it has to be said that the past 2 years prior to the most recent one had excellent growing conditions, and this year had gone back to, let's say, average growing conditions. We also saw out of these figures an interesting breakdown between states. For example, we saw in WA and in Queensland, their overall crop production fall by around 45% each, WA being one of the biggest producers, if not the biggest cropper in Australia, and Queensland being by far one of the smaller because it's more a cattle state. South Australia and New South Wales, their cropping production fell by 30%. In Victoria, which arguably got less dry patches and good rain, things only went down by about 6%. But what is also interesting is that those big drops that I just mentioned in production weren't reflected in the amount of acreage. So all states still grew and harvested about the same acreage as they had the year before. So what can we tell from that? We can tell, once again, that the seasons have gone from being optimal to average, but it also sets a challenge. It says to the industry, right, on about the same amount of ground, you produced a lot less in an average season. So here's the challenge, to keep finding ways to produce more in an average season and to produce it sustainably as well. It's also interesting that we saw the biggest falls in wheat and canola, about 30% over the previous 2 years, less so in barley. Although, once again, let's look at that in context. That is because there had been big surges in wheat and canola, and there hasn't been as much barley grown as over the past few years. The prices of wheat and canola have made them more attractive. So what about looking forward? What are we thinking and what's ABARES thinking that the crop could look like in 2024-25, the crop that will go in soon and that will be harvested around the end of this year and flowing into 2025? ABARES is predicting a crop increase and they are saying 9%. Now, it's interesting to try and read their minds as to why it would go up to 9%. And that's probably because if you chart it, that would be where it went on average growth. Australian crop production goes up and down markedly based on droughts and based on good weather, but a 9% increase going into the coming year would be about average growth, but remains to be seen. A lot of people in the industry think it could be a lot better because there's been good rain over the last few months, despite the predictions of an El Nino. It didn't happen in most areas, and the weather was good. And going forward over the growing season for crops in 2024, there is a forecast for good rain. The other thing that ABARES is predicting is that there could be a big jump in some crops, some of the lesser known ones, whether it's oats, lupins, and triticale. They could climb by anything from 25% to 60%, although that would be to bring them back into line with average growth. So as far as crops go in Australia, so much of the price depends on what's happening around the world. And let's have a quick think about what's happening globally in ag. In where we sit here in the early part of 2024, wheat prices particularly have fallen to their lowest level in 4 years. Now, that could be looked at as a concern, but needs to be looked at in other ways. The first question is, why have wheat prices gone down? And it comes to one word largely, and that's Russia. Russia has had, being a major wheat grower, a very good production year, and it is also seeing a big increase in exports, up to about 51 million tonnes. Once again, to put that in context, that is well clear of all other exporting countries. It is about one quarter of all global exports. It is 2.5 times what Australia exports. And the other thing about Russia exporting is that they desperately need hard currency coming in. So they're saying to big wheat buyers around the world, we will lower the price to make it more attractive to make sure you buy it. Now, this could last for a while if Russia has another good season, and that could mean that wheat prices stay where they are for the time being. It's also interesting to note on a world grain basis that the US corn crop has also been very good. And why this matters is that means there's an ample amount of feed grain in the world, corn competing with wheat in some points, so that keeps prices down. But the other way to look at global prices is that maybe things are just a return to normal. We see wheat prices spike now and then over the years, and we think, wow, things are going well, but we forget that it's temporary. We've seen wheat prices spike in 2008 and 2012 and then 2021 for different reasons, whether it was a lack of supply at the time, whether it was drought at some times in 2021, whether it was the COVID uncertainty, and more recently around the Ukraine uncertainty. So we are now seeing global prices down, but in a way, we have to look at it and say, perhaps for the time being, this is a return to normal, and this is where prices may stay for some time going forward. So that's cropping. Let's look at dairy, and let's look what's happening in the milk sector in Australia and globally. The Australian dairy sector, this will come to no surprise as industry watchers and so many listeners as well, that ABARES predicts and the industry predicts that the decline in milk production will continue in Australia, that it had plateaued a bit over the last year, but likely to gradually keep going down for the same reasons as we've all been seeing for a while now. The fact that there are less and less dairy farms in Australia. A lot of dairy farmers, for different reasons, are deciding to take a good price from beef producers next door, are deciding to sell to a dairy farm next door, are deciding that their family aren't going to take over that farm and it's time to sell and move to the seaside or move into town. And we are seeing that contraction. There are less cows, there are less farms as well. It is not an uncommon industry process. We've seen it in the sheep industry to a degree. We've seen it in other industries, and that is where things are going. But what else is going to impact the dairy industry going forward this year? There are forecasts that the farm gate price, the price that the dairy processors pay to the farmers, which is basically worked out in the middle of every year and then stays for about a year, or that is a price that they cannot go below, that is likely to go down in 2024, and that may prompt some more dairy farmers to leave, and that may mean that dairy production and dairy cows goes down even further and continues the trend. We're also seeing the dairy processors saying they are competing with imports, and imports continue to strengthen. Interestingly, Australia doubled its dairy imports between 2013 and 2023, especially in butter and skim milk. The processing side of Australian dairy is going to be interesting in 2024. The industry is preparing to see one processor, Saputo, really almost halve its operations in Australia, it's announced. So the impact on that will be closely watched, plus the impact of pricing. And whether if the slowing down or the reduction in processing could mean it has an impact on pricing. What about world prices? Well, world prices and what exporters are getting for their milk products and dairy products on the global market, they have slowed down too. It's especially because China has slowed down its demand. Chinese consumers in economic times and post-COVID as well, that has really slowed down. There is also changing competition out there. While the Americans might be lifting their output, and we have to think that the big competitors on the world dairy export stage are the US, New Zealand, and Europe, the Americans are lifting. New Zealand and Europe are interesting, and they are both slowly and slightly feeling the impact of regulations. We're seeing New Zealand slightly reduce its dairy production and its dairy cows and dairy acreage. Nothing huge, but a trend to watch closely, and whether it will be slightly less competitive on world markets in the long term. Same with the Europeans. We've all seen the European dairy farmer protests, and whether that has an impact going forward, and we see European milk on the world market compete less. But for the time being in Australia, it will mean that products can be the same prices on shelves. It will mean we'll see more imports. It may mean that consumers may look more for some of the Australian products and at times be prepared to pay slightly more for the non-milk products, but definitely an industry to watch. Let's go on to the third one. What is happening in Australia's cotton industry? Dare we say that this is a good news story. The Australian cotton outlook and the world cotton prices are both looking good for those in the industry. The cotton industry is leading into the picking season, normally around March and April. And there are forecasts that the Australian cotton crop may be, and forecasts vary, around 4.5 to 4.8 million bales. Once again, for those not in the cotton industry, this is a very good figure. It might be 25% down on last year, as a lot of agricultural cropping products are down on the last two good years. But as we say, that is coming off an exceptionally good year. And that figure forecast for this coming season would still be around the sixth highest ever for Australia. In fact, not far off the fourth highest figure as well. So that's looking strong. There have been good rains in a lot of areas, and that is optimistic. Globally, cotton prices are very high at the moment. It is interesting as to why when you compare them to a lot of grain and oilseed prices, which have slumped. Global cotton prices are their highest since 2022. They've particularly surged for a few reasons. First of all, there is concern about supply, the amount of cotton in the world after the US drought. And that has meant that cotton importers and processors have paid a bit more to really try and lock in supplies. Interestingly, that supply could be at a seven-year low, and cotton importers need to have cotton in their warehouses to process, to turn into clothes, to turn into home goods as well. The second thing about cotton, and we've talked about this before, is that while some food imports may go down in tough economic times because people might be buying less, cotton always looks further ahead. And cotton importers often look beyond tough economic times, knowing there'll be a recovery, so we'll buy up so that they have time to process and have goods to sell when things recover. And this has been happening for decades in cotton, and we're seeing that right now. A number of countries pay more for this post-hard economic times and keep those prices high so they have the goods ready when things get better again. And we could well see that this period of high cotton prices lasts well into 2024. Finally, let's have a look at the wine industry today in Australia, or particularly the wine grape industry as well. And a quick look at this, and encourage you to read our report to look into this more deeply. There is absolutely no doubt that the Australian wine and wine grape industry right now is going through a very challenging period. It is really seeing low exports right now, largely because of the tariffs that China imposed on Australian wine a few years ago, and the fact that there is an oversupply of wine in Australia that didn't get used for those exports really is holding the industry back. It's a structural adjustment, and it can and will be painful for a lot of people in the wine supply chain, whether it is the wine grape growers, whether it is the processors and winemakers, some of the smaller ones as well, and exporters as well, as it flows through. Australian wine exports, if you look back, have gone in cycles over the years. And the point we are at now with Australian exports really is about the same as we were 24, 25 years ago in 2000 and 2001. Australian wine exports then were about 1.8 billion. And then they surged over the next 7 years because the world really got into Australian wines. Things were prosperous to about 3 billion. And then they slumped again. We had the global financial crisis and people moved away from it. And then the industry circumstances changed again. Free trade agreements, which gave more benefits to Australian wine exports, and China developing a taste for Australian wines, particularly the reds. And they climbed back in 2018, 2019, back to about 3 billion. And now, as we say, here we are back to around that 2000 figure again, way back down by at least a billion or so. As we say, there is lots of wine in storage. We are seeing grape prices plummet. We have the issue of China, and everybody's watching that day by day. Will the tariffs come off? If they do, will China go back to importing nearly as much Australian wine as it did before? And even outside China, the landscape is changing for wine. Whether it's the economic times and Australians and global drinkers, both with Australian wine and their own and wine from other countries, are saying maybe we'll buy a bit less, maybe we'll buy a bit cheaper while we're tightening our belts. And even drinking habits. People are also drinking less in most advanced countries at the moment, and that is having an impact on wine too. This will take a while to work its way through the Australian wine supply chain. It may see a change in the use of acreage because there's still a lot of grapes being grown compared to what they were in the past. That may change, and whether it will come back to grapes in future remains to be seen. It may see a change in the number of small winemakers as well, if the market isn't there for a while too. For the consumer and the wine drinker out there in Australia, well, it could mean that there is cheaper wine and abundant wine for the time being. But this is really an industry which over coming years will see some rationalisation and will see some change.
Thanks for that, Michael. Much appreciated. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the autumn update of the Agri In Focus session. Look forward to a new season and hopefully some great outcomes for everybody. Special thanks to Courtney, Elena, Michael and Adelaide, and look forward to seeing as many of you as possible out in the field in the coming months. Thank you.